You're in the war room. My name is Vince Nero. Welcome to the program. Hope everyone's doing well out there. All good on our end. Today's program, we've got two great nutritionists, Tamara Green and Sarah Grossman. Their first book on dealing with cancer. If you know anybody who has had cancer, we have all come in touch with folks who have cancer, who's recovered from cancer. They will be discussing their book about the types of foods they should be eating. Actually, in fact, we should all be eating. It's a great book. They'll talk about it. Tamara and Sarah on the War Room. Tamara Green, Sarah Grossman, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
The two of you are both nutritionists.
Yes, we are.
And I came together to collaborate on a couple books of which we're going to talk about today. The first one being The Living Kitchen, and the second half, we'll talk about it. It's the all-around brain health and the whole concept of food surrounding the brain and your mood and things of that nature. But before we get into the books, tell us a little bit how the two of you connected.
Sure. So we actually met in nutrition school, and we happened to sit next to each other on the first day of school. That's really how we met.
Yeah.
And we just connected. We hit it off. And when we were in school at the time, we thought, why don't we start working together and see if we can make something of this? And this was 13 plus years ago now. So it's been, this partnership has been going on for a long time.
So day one, it was love at first sight.
Friendship.
Well, in terms of connecting and all that stuff. So you guys went to nutritional school, and you know, a lot of folks that are out there, you know, they get sick, whatever, they go to their doctor, the primary health care. And over time, you know, like most people, whether you're a new person to this country or you hear a doctor's recommendation is always something that is, you got to take, that is golden. You got to listen to them. And I believe in the last maybe 10, 15 years, people are starting to question more and more. And you're finding out more and more that most general practitioners or MDs in school never really are taught about nutrition. So, you know, you go to a doctor with an ailment and they give you a prescription and they send you off. And they never really talk to you about the foods you should eat and whatever. Did you find that in the area that you guys are in, that you guys are starting to complement more and more doctors?
Yeah, I think there's more awareness now. And a lot of doctors talk more about food, or at least how it complements things, like you're saying. Like, yes, you still would take your medication or your medicine for whatever illness you're dealing with, but also supporting the body with diet can make a really big difference. So eating more vegetables, eating more whole foods instead of things that are processed and have a lot of refined ingredients added in. Things like that, like good oils that are not as refined. So things like extra virgin olive oil.
Tamara, this book is all around people who have cancer or coming off cancer or recovering from cancer. The genesis of the book, how did that come about? Was it that you knew some people, like we all have been in touch with cancer and people know someone who's got cancer? How did this book come about?
Yeah, this book came about, The Living Kitchen. This is our first book. And it came about because when we were in our 20s at the time, many of our friends were starting to get diagnosed with cancer. And that was really scary and really alarming, because when you are a 20-year-old or, you know, in your mid-20s, you think about cancer as a disease that's going to hit someone later in life, not when they're in their younger years. And so that was this real wake-up call for us, like, oh, wow, there's something going on here. Our friends are getting sick. Obviously, we had known many people in our lives who had cancer as well through the years. And there was something about that, about having our friends specifically be diagnosed, that we thought, okay, we feel like there's something we can do to help. And so honestly, one day we just looked at each other and we said, we have to start working with people with cancer. So we delved into so much research, researching the foods that were best, what to be eating, what not to be eating. And we essentially created a meal delivery service, a private chef service. We started consulting with people with cancer. And so that was really the genesis of this cookbook, of getting to truly understand from a person-to-person level, because we were working with people and their caregivers and their families, like, how is food going to help you as you have cancer and as you're going through treatment, as you're going through recovery? And then what can your caregiver or your family or your loved ones do to support you as you go through this journey? So that was the whole genesis of it.
And Sarah, the recipes, there's 100 recipes in this particular book, correct?
I think there are over 100 recipes.
Yeah. 100, but there's
around
100. The book talks about 100, and there's 100 generally. And most of these recipes, as Tamara said, it's based on science data, research. You know, everybody is different. Obviously, cancer is cancer. There's different kinds of cancers. Are there different foods for different ailments, or is it just a generic, a better diet across the board?
We don't focus on a specific type of cancer. We really focus on supporting the body.
Right.
Yeah, and especially through treatment. So people experience a lot of different side effects. So in the book, we have a whole section about different foods that can help deal with different side effects. So things like nausea or loss of taste. Can you think of other examples too?
Yeah, if you don't have an appetite,
it's a big one. Yeah, so we really made the recipes to try to incorporate some of the foods that would specifically help with that. So for example, ginger historically, and also studies have shown, has been used to really help with nausea. So we can use it in things like tea, but we can also put it into recipes. So things like soup and broths, you can put it in and infuse it into the liquid. And you can also put it in things like a smoothie or even dressings. There's so many ways you can get creative.
Tamara, so people are watching this program. Like I said, cancer affects a lot of people. And someone who's watching this for the first time and is looking at this program and maybe probably thought about the food piece, because it's always about therapy and going to Princess Margaret and taking your pills and things of that nature. And we know that has an effect on your system. And as they say, the most important piece of real estate is your body, and you have to really look after it. And if someone who's watching this program is like, obviously knows there's a food piece and get your book, what would you recommend? Would you say right away, get off of sugar, get off of coffee? Like, what would you do, some basic recommendations that you would make?
Yeah, basic recommendations. So our philosophy is always include before taking away.
Right.
Because if you just start with taking away, what tends to happen is you'll miss the food, they'll come back significantly, there might be a binge on them, or the restriction, although sometimes is important, bringing foods in first is key. And in this particular book, we really highlight color, like colorful vegetables, colorful fruits, colorful plants. And plants include grains and beans and legumes and nuts and seeds, not just vegetables and fruits. And the reason is because there's something called phytonutrients that exist within all of these plants. And it's really what gives these plants their color, their smell, and their protective qualities. And so when you're introducing a lot of color into your diet, you're actually introducing all these wonderful protective qualities. We hear about turmeric and its anti-inflammatory properties, and like Sarah said, with ginger and berries, like all of these things really support our overall system, our whole body, so that it can actually help when we're undergoing different, you know, potential treatments.
Sarah, in terms of liquids, like smoothies, you have smoothies in there, and a lot of folks still drink coffee and teas and water. And the whole thing about water, how important is water, is based on a lot of the stuff that you move forward. Is water a big piece of what you guys are your proponents?
Well, water is definitely really important. And so many of us don't drink enough water.
Well, that's the key.
Yeah. And I think some people, or many people, don't love that water so plain. I hear that a lot from clients. They tell us, I know I should be drinking water, but it just doesn't taste good. Or they want to drink something that has more flavor. So I think one of the best ways that you can entice, you know, water drinking and make it more delicious is putting something in it. So you could put some lemon, a little bit of lemon if you like that, or you can also put something like berries or even mint leaves, or cucumber.
Right.
Just ways to spruce up the water and make it a little bit more exciting.
Where are you with electrolytes? Like a lot of folks put electrolytes in their water. Is electrolytes something that should be a little bit more regulated because of the salt that goes into the electrolytes?
Well, electrolytes can be really helpful, and a lot of times we need it, especially when it comes to the cookbook that we're talking about. If you're going through treatment or dealing with cancer or any type of severe illness, making sure you get electrolytes is actually really helpful to make sure that the body is hydrated and you're getting the water into your cells. So there's a lot of electrolyte out there. I'm not sure in terms of the regulation, but I would look for a brand that clearly states what's in it.
Yeah, so I use a brand called Elements. There's a lot of good ones out there. And like you said, do your research. Like, it's always good to do your research. And, you know, even talk about water, I bought a hydrogen bottle, which converts water into the hydrogen. And there's a lot of fads and things of it. But I found that buying this hydrogen bottle and converting the water into the hydrogen, they call it the hydrogen water, which makes it a little more pure. Even though it's a shtick, it makes you drink more water. But at the end of the day, it really is about drinking more water.
Yeah, if that's going to get you to drink more water, then...
Keep doing it.
Keep doing it.
You were going to say something?
I was just going to say, that's exactly it. It's like, what are the tips and tricks you need to almost trick your brain into doing it? Is it like, I've seen people...
Which we're going to talk about.
I've seen people walk around with those jugs that are like big, and they got to
handle
like
this.
And, you know, it's whatever you need to do for yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
Tamara, like as we've talked about, and you see there's fads that come in. There's this carnivore diet, there's this diet, there's that diet, intermittent fasting, and the whole basis of intermittent fasting, try not to eat for basic 16, 18 hours, and then have that window where you eat. Simple, doesn't cost you a lot of money, and it's been a big kind of a fad right now. I do intermittent fasting, and I find that it helps me. Obviously, I have some cheat days, and you have to monitor that window. And I've read a lot of research also from the standpoint of cancer and other things, and people recommend highly to do the intermittent fasting because it gives your body a time to kind of regenerate. And they cut the autophagy piece that goes in and whatever. What's your position of intermittent fasting, which could include a lot of your recipes,
right.
But where does intermittent fasting
fit in?
Where do
we stand? So intermittent fasting, I think, has so many benefits, and it depends who you are, and it depends why you're doing it. So some of the benefits include that it actually gives your gut a break. So it gives your digestive system this chance to properly fully digest your food, gives the microbes in your gut this break. It also, depending on how long you fast, helps with autophagy, and that means that this regeneration of cells, that you have these healthy cells, it has wonderful properties in terms of brain focus. It also has something called metabolic flexibility, where you get to sort of turn your body into which fuel it's using. Is it using sugars? Is it ketones? Is it using fat? And so there's so many wonderful things about fasting. I think, to be honest, when you're a man, fasting is a lot easier and your body can respond a lot better, simply because your body doesn't have the same hormones, doesn't go through the same cyclical things that a female body does depending on age. And so though fasting can have great benefits, the one detriment to fast, or I would say the two detriments to fasting, one is if your window is too short, it's actually really difficult to get the macronutrient protein in there, and enough protein. Protein is our longevity macronutrient. Is it really what builds our bodies, builds our muscles, helps build our bones, helps with our brain function. It's our healing macronutrient. It's our repair macronutrient. So if we're not getting enough protein within that window, that's not ideal. And that's when you would want to shift your window a little bit. And then another thing about fasting is it's a stress on the body, but it's actually a really great stress. However, if you're someone who is like, your stress load is full, meaning you are already running on empty, to add fasting in there might actually do more detriment to your stress levels. So that's why I say it really depends on the person. And if you go, honestly, we like to tell our clients, start 12 to 14 hours. That's a great starting point for a lot of people. And naturally, a lot of people are actually already fasting that much. And then if you want to take it a little bit longer and open up that fasting window, let's chat and see if that's right for you.
You're sleeping 7 to 8 hours on the average. So that's a nice piece. It's just a matter of extending it. The issue becomes is people are so used to breakfast. And when you tell someone to skip breakfast, it's almost like you're throwing them off their game. Depends. And so everybody is different, Sarah. You have to look at everything separately, and everybody's different, and their whole systems are different, and their mindsets. But working with someone to change a routine is probably one of the hardest things to do.
Yes. I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head with why people need support and why we all need somebody to coach us or encourage us, whether that's a friend or a family member, or if you want to work with a professional just to help you with making changes. Yeah, definitely having support. And we do try to do that in the cookbook in terms of giving you tools and encouragement on how to make those changes in a way that not too overwhelming. We really want to break things into small steps. That's one of the ways that we try to make it more approachable.
So the book has over 100 type recipes. Obviously, you stay away from all the bad things, the sugars, whatever. But I'm assuming there's a secret recipe in these things and how you kind of put it together, correct?
Yeah.
Your recipes. I'm everybody has a secret sauce to it. Is there a secret sauce to some of your recipes?
Of course. Well, actually, not so secret because they're all out there in the book. But yes,
the combination.
So we really like to ensure that most recipes has a combo of protein, fat, fiber. These three together create this really nice balance for the body, help with blood sugar balance. Like I said before, protein does so much for our system. Fiber does so much for our body, especially for our gut health, and fat really for our brain health, and also to help stabilize blood sugar, give us energy. So that combination, that's kind of our secret sauce right there.
Yes, but in terms of this segment on your book, The Living Kitchen, and folks who have cancer and recovering from cancer, at the end of the day, really, it's a matter of knowing your body, picking up things like this book and doing some research and really changing your lifestyle, mainly with food, correct?
Well, food is one piece of that puzzle. Yeah, food is a big part of it. So with the cookbook, we our goal is to be that puzzle, that piece of the puzzle.
And The Living Kitchen would be a good piece of that puzzle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It works really well when whatever type of treatment someone decides to get, whether they go with a traditional route or they're doing something more natural or they're doing both, the cookbook can really fit in with whatever someone.
You know, and going through the cookbook, I mean, even if like you want to avoid some issues in the future, they're great recipes to live by as well. I was showing this book to a couple of people and they were saying, wow, there's some great recipes in here. And obviously people eat with their eyes and the pictures are phenomenal in the book. Yeah. Tamara, Sarah, thanks for being on the program. Two great books, Good Food, Good Mood, and The Living Kitchen. Appreciate you guys being on. We learned a lot and hopefully we'll get you to come back soon and bring us up to speed on the nuances in the food industry. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. We'll catch you next time on The War Room.